Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Good morning, millennials. Welcome back to the Morning Toast. Happy Wednesday. It is hump day. Hope everyone's having an amazing Wednesday so far. Do not forget, I know it's easy to forget, do not forget to hump someone you love. It is so imperative.
Thank you for that reminder. I mean, Dew is here, so we're celebrating in style. And speaking of style, I'm switching it up today.
You look lovely.
Thank you so much. Well, it is so hot in New York. Like, there is a heat wave.
And it's rained, like, every afternoon because it gets so hot.
And you thought last night's rain was going to break the heat wave, but today it is still so hot. It's going to get up to 90 today. So I was just like, you got to dress for the weather. And so I've just been really going into the back of my closet and trying to wear all of my clothes.
Can I ask you something that, like, maybe you'll agree with me on?
Sure.
When you, like, show up somewhere, like, wearing something unusual, like, not unusual, but different than, like, what your normal garb is, and everyone's like, whoa, don't you find that so rude? Like,
no. 100%. I was, like, nervous to walk in here today, but I feel totally supported by everyone in the studio this new look.
I actually thought when you came in, because I did wear a dress yesterday, and you, when I walked in, you were like, a dress? And
no, I'm
like,
I didn't.
Yeah, you did. You're like, simla.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. No, you said simla. It was just dress in Hebrew.
I didn't say that.
You both did. Yes, you both did. Thank you. My memory. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to support Jackie. Because, like, you know, you sometimes it's like, I always think of when Erica Jayne rolled up in Berlin in that latex outfit and Teddy Mellencamp was, like, giving her shit for it.
Do you know what's so crazy is I walked in here this morning and you said to me, simla.
Yeah, and I said, you look so sweet.
Right. But, like, so yesterday I said to you, simla, and you didn't feel supported.
You were like, whoa, and then you're saying that you're simla. No, I'm not trying to clown. Like, I'm not trying to, like, bring you down. I'm just trying to say, like, I recognize, like, it's just a thing people do, and they're like, when you dress different, everyone's like, makes a thing of it. It's like, just leave me alone. Like,
yeah, no, stop.
Let me wear my simla.
Go away. No, this dress is really, like, not meant for New York City vibes, but just, like, this heat, it's, what are you supposed to fucking wear?
No, we both look like we're going to the country club. We're just doing different activities. Like,
yeah, no.
I'm headed to the tennis court.
I'm headed to lunch with the ladies.
Which, in reality, like, if we ever were at a country club, like, I would be at lunch with the ladies, you would be at the tennis court.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully they have pickleball.
Yeah. Wait, so we have such a good show today. It's Wednesday, it's hump day, which usually means a few things. One, it means we're humping Theo. Still happening. Do not worry. Second is we usually do Dear Toasters. We have decided to postpone today's Dear Toasters till tomorrow because we just did a Dear Toasters yesterday with Chelsea Handler, which was so iconic, and we're so glad everyone enjoyed that episode. And today's episode is already going to be extra long because we recorded a fabulous interview yesterday with someone who we admire so much.
So much.
Who we talk about all the time.
All the time.
Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful from Shark Tank, was here. He was so funny. I have to say, I think I was, like, most surprised by him out of all the guests we've ever had. He was so thoughtful. We had, like, a really interesting conversation. He talked so much about his wine company, which went public yesterday.
Yeah.
So he was just giving us, like, business tips and
tricks.
We
did our first ever wine tasting on the show, which was so interesting. I feel like we learned so much. And usually, I mean, I don't want to spoil what we drank and how it tasted, but I was really pleasantly surprised because those were not categories that I really venture into.
And so he was in studio with us. We have the video up on our YouTube channel. It's also going to be at the end of the podcast. I really implore you to watch a YouTube video. He was being so funny. He wore this crazy fucking outfit and he's just very charismatic. And it was honestly one of my favorite interviews we've ever done.
It really was. Like, we came in with our questions, which we got to ask, like, all of them, but then also the conversation just took
he flipped the switch on us.
No, like, it just when, you know, it was just a conversation.
It was like 40 minutes.
Yeah. So it was really interesting to talk to him. I think we had such a great conversation. Probably one of my favorite Toast interviews that we've done. And we just love having a shark up in the joint. We're now three. We've
Damon,
got three sharks.
Barbara, Kevin.
Who's your next dream shark?
I mean, like, if I went on the tank, I would really want Lori to invest in my deal, or Mark.
But who would you want to come on the Toast?
Lori.
That would be a good one.
Yeah. Lori also, I think out of all the sharks, like, has her social media game down pat. She, like, kills it on TikTok and stuff. So I, like, would just love that synergy.
Yeah. I'd like to get Robert. You know how I feel about Robert.
I know. You're obsessed with him.
Yeah. No. I mean, and now it's changed. And I really feel like the more I watch Shark Tank, like, the more that I did watch Shark Tank, you really come to appreciate Mr. Wonderful. And even as he explained in the interview yesterday, it's like he's being kind and telling people to go back to their day jobs.
He was being so funny.
So, like, I really can appreciate that. But I like that Robert always makes the entrepreneur, like, feel special.
Yeah, even though
some people aren't special and they shouldn't think that they are.
No,
but
so,
like,
all people are special. Their companies aren't all special.
It's like, that's like in Younger, where she's like, why are you special? She's like, I know that I'm not.
Yeah, right.
And that's the right answer.
Have you been keeping up with Younger?
Nope.
The season finale, I think, is on tonight. Series finale. There's one more episode.
I'll get there Monday.
Yeah, it's not anything pressing. But that's our programming update. Our second tier toasters of the week, we're going to move to tomorrow so we can spread that out a little bit and you can just enjoy Mr. Wonderful today. So we have that. We have the Fast Five. We have Real Housewives of New York recap. And we're just, like, alive.
Yeah, we are. We've got a lot to do, and I guess we should just get right to it.
You think?
I don't know. I thought that's where you were going. So
no,
you just threw back at me.
I didn't really have anything to share.
Did you do anything fun yesterday? Anything fabulous?
No, I just, like, yesterday was the busiest day of my life. Like, work, meetings. And unfortunately, those types of days, while they're good for productivity, they're not great for this segment of the podcast.
Oh, I understand. No, but it's good. It's good to see everyone getting back to work.
Yeah, I did. I did read some of our podcast reviews yesterday. I don't know what.
Why?
I don't know. That's one of those things, like, I just don't go towards for my own mental health. But something was just bringing me to it, and they honestly weren't terrible.
Yeah. No, sometimes they're not terrible, and even sometimes when they're terrible, like, maybe you could learn a thing or two. Like, I've seen a few things where it's like, no, yeah, you're onto something. Like,
yeah, usually, like, usually the reviews are either 5-star or 1-star. Like, 1-star, you're like a former disgruntled toaster, like, you know,
yeah,
leaving a review just because you feel like it. And 5-stars, you're just like a normal person, or 4.
But there are some 3s where it's like, okay.
It's actually valuable.
I hear you. I could see that.
I would say that our biggest, like, valid critique is that, like, we talk about so much stuff, like, so many stories, different industries, and not always do we have 100% of the facts. And I'm here to say, like, that is valid, but we are also, like, not encyclopedias. Like, there's only so much information we can retain every day for a million different stories. Like, so yes, I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially yesterday when I was talking about that Ellen interview that I had in a dream. It was a real interview.
Okay. I think that's fine that you were confused.
Yes. Yeah, so, like, that's a valid critique, but, like, what do we do about that?
No, I see that and I hear that and I get it, but then it's like, okay, if I'm not fully in the know on a story, like, so we just shouldn't talk about it, but then it's like we're not talking about stories that are happening. So I think that most people, when they read stories, like, they got the gist of it. They don't know every single detail. So I think it depends, you know?
And then the other critique, which is out of our control but completely valid, is the fast-talking vocal fry. Because literally I watched our episode from yesterday and it was fine up until we started talking about Siesta Key. Jackie, we did not take a breath. Like, it was so fucking fast. And I'm like, I see what people see.
Okay. I could try to keep that in mind. I think I was probably talking quickly about Siesta Key.
You were excited.
Because, like, then we needed to get to The Bachelor. Usually I talk fast when I feel like no one wants to hear what I'm saying.
But we always want to hear what you're saying. Okay. All the time.
Well, speaking of Siesta Key, I'm caught up after last night. I caught up. They're on the island. I need to talk about this island. Like, it's so sickening. The premise is that Sam J-Lo, like, booked the island for everyone, but, like, Kelsey's invited and has her own house. Like, Sam J-Lo is not paying for that.
MTV is.
They're there for a month. It's exactly what I was saying needed to happen. Like, we need them to be in a confined space, cameras everywhere. We won't miss a thing. So
that's an innovative way to film during COVID.
100%. I'm so excited, and I look forward to the next episode. I'm so glad that I'm caught up on The Key because these kids are crazy.
You're keeping up with The Key.
I'm keeping up with The Key, for sure. Oh, and in bathing suit, the battle of the bathing suits.
Which is the funniest storyline I think I've ever experienced in my life.
So obviously these things were filmed 6 months ago. So I was like, let me see where the
brands are at.
Where the brands are at now. I checked out Juliet's. I checked out Kelsey's. Saw how many followers each of them had.
JMP has like better branding social.
JMP has 80K. By Kelsey Owens has 60K.
Still good.
And then I checked out the swimwear because I wanted to see what everyone was making. And I did not expect that anything would be for me because Kelsey and Juliet have extremely different bodies than I do. But when I was checking out JMP, the label, I found what I think is a bathing suit that will really suit me. She like sells her tops and bottoms separately. So there was a bottom that's like my high waist cut, which I like.
Yeah.
And then there was a top that looked like it could hold a big breast.
Ooh.
And so I was influenced. And
did
I,
you purchase?
I purchased.
Wow.
I'm really excited to share my updates.
You must keep us abreast on the Battle of the Bikinis.
I will keep you abreast on whether or not my breasts fit
into. Are kept abreast.
Are kept abreast by JMP, the label. But I was real, like, there were some really cute styles that I felt like I could squeeze myself into.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Please keep us abreast.
I will keep you abreast.
Okay. Well, now I feel comfortable.
I feel comfortable.
Sliding into. There's so much to discuss. Chris Harrison.
It felt too premature. There's so much to discuss. Claudia, you're going to be explaining some things to us today.
There is so much YouTube drama, like, and I actually know about it this time.
Oh, okay. Well, even your conjecture, we enjoy.
Yeah, but sometimes when there's YouTube drama and like it becomes like trending, I like learn about it once it becomes trending. But I've actually been following this podcast pretty frequently for the last like year, ever since I like became obsessed with TikTok, because it's like a TikTok thing.
Okay, great. So without further ado, where are you? Right here, because it's hump day, hump someone you love. It is time for the fast five stories that you need to know before you wake up and take a bite out of your morning toast.
And today's episode is brought to you by Quince. Do you like the quality of designer clothes but don't like the prices? Then you'll love Quince. How many times has a price tag stopped you from buying something you really wanted? Why does true quality cost so much? Well, now it's affordable at Quince. With Quince, you can imagine waking up one morning and everything you've wanted is half price. At Quince, that's not a dream, that's reality. Luxury products don't have to be expensive, but they're marked up 8 to 10 times by retailers. Quince will connect you directly to the factories that make products for the world's leading luxury brands, so you get the highest quality products at an insanely low price. It's true, like you will die. When we went on the website, cashmere, bags, home stuff for the home, bedding, it was actually crazy how reasonably priced it was compared to those luxury markups. And it's just fun to shop for things for your home, for yourself. Treat yourself. At Quince, you'll find the finest apparel, cashmere, bags, bedding, accessories, and more at 50 to 80% less than what you'd pay for the same quality at the most expensive luxury brand products. They have washable silk loungewear and pajamas, Italian leather bags, 100% grade A Mongolian cashmere sweaters and sets, Belgian linen sheets. Their goods are incredibly high quality. They're made in a sustainable way, and they are sold at radically lower prices. It is 100% factory direct, so there's no retail markups or middlemen. You can compare Quince products with any premium branded ones, and you'll see why their customers rate Quince so highly. To get 50 to 80% off top of the line clothing and home goods, plus free shipping, text TMT to 64000. That's TMT, as in the morning toast, TMT, to 64000. Terms apply, available at onequince.com/terms. Text TMT to 64000.
Love it. Okay, first story, the big story of the day. Well, there's two today, but amongst.
The bigger one.
The bigger one. Chris Harrison is leaving the Bachelor franchise for good after dramatic exit negotiations. It's official, Chris Harrison will never return to the Bachelor franchise. Harrison's departure comes following a media spectacle of a controversy that erupted when the longtime host made racially insensitive comments defending a contestant from the franchise. Numerous insiders tell Variety that Harrison wanted to stay with the hit franchise, which he has hosted since it premiered in 2002. Harrison is said to be very passionate about Bachelor Nation and was hoping to make it work to keep his job. But as the situation escalated, his team became outraged with the dragging out process and was unhappy with the network and studio not publicly supporting Harrison, since he has been with the show since the very beginning and is an integral part of its success. Within the past few days, Harrison's lawyer began to quickly explore an exit package, which we found out he got an
mid-range eight figure.
Okay, but then I also saw he wanted $25 million. He did not get that. So it's somewhere between $10 million and $25 million.
The initial Variety like press release said mid-range eight figures, which the middle of eight figures is $50 million. So everyone was like shook. Then I read in Page Six he wanted 25. He didn't quite get that. So I'm thinking something like 15 to 20.
I'm thinking that too.
Which is nuts. Like, pay me $20 million not to work on a sinking ship. Okay. Like, oh my God, did Chris Harrison make out like a bandit or what? Like, and the, by the way, I screenshotted this. I forgot. I don't know if I sent it to you. The ratings are in for...
Oh, no, you didn't send it to me.
For Katie Thurston's season. Ready? Premiere.
Okay, I'm so curious.
Let me give you some backstory.
Please do.
Rachel Lindsay's season, 5.7.
Million?
Yes.
Okay.
Becca Kufrin, 5.6. Hannah Brown, 6.1. That was a high point for the franchise. Claire Crawley, 4.8. Tayshia, 5.1. Katie Thurston, 3.6. So that's...
That's not good. That doesn't sound...
That's 2 million less.
It sounds like the chart went... There was a dip.
And I think there are a lot of people in Bachelor Nation for some reason who like will fight a war for Chris Harrison. Like some of the things I'm seeing online, people are just like obsessed with him. And when these numbers came in, it hadn't been announced yet that Chris Harrison wasn't returning. And I actually think next week's numbers will be even lower. Like well, people standing in solidarity with Chris Harrison.
Not even
whatever.
That. Night one numbers are always higher. Like you yes, even watch yes. night one because people want to see what the season's about. Night one is always like they pull out all the stops. Let's look at the ratings mid-season when they start like really fucking pulling teeth.
And
even the fans of the show might skip those episodes.
And I thought it was really interesting. During like the very beginning of the episode, I checked to see how many followers Katie Thurston had. She had 612. Mm-hmm. Last night I checked, she had 630. It's like you see bigger
she
growth.
She had 612 before the episode premiered?
Yes.
That's not good.
Yeah, so I just think it's indicative. Like this franchise truly is a sinking ship.
Yeah.
And so for Chris Harrison... I think, like, if I were him, like, I would be very pleased with my situation. I'm very curious to see where we go from here because although the Tayshia and Caitlyn thing is really fun, I don't think it's a permanent solution.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think the show is on its way out, it seems like, but it also seems like he would have rode with it till the end. He was there since the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure... And according to this article, if he had his way, he would be back on the show.
Yes, and I think that a lot of the reason why he got so much money is he's not allowed to ever speak on this scandal or anything that like went on beyond like the producers behind the scenes, like ever again. And I'm sure if he wanted to, if he didn't get enough money, he could have written a book mm-hmm. or done an interview or got paid for something similar amount to just blow it all up. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure there's a like really fucked up shit that goes on behind the scenes. Like if you think about the genesis of like everything Chris Harrison has witnessed, not even this like Rachel and Matt scandal, like Corinne
since 2002,
Corinne in Paradise, like there's, and they like glazed over a lot of what happened there. Like there's so many like fucked up things that go on behind Bachelor behind the scenes. Even I'm sure what went on behind the scenes here was even more fucked up with the whole Rachel and Matt thing. So he could have really blown it up. And I guess they just wanted him to shut up.
Yeah. So they paid him.
Yeah. And like when this show gets canceled inevitably in the next like 3 or 4 years, I really feel like that's true. Like Chris Harrison's going to be like laughing with his $20 million.
Yeah.
And he, never having to work.
Yeah.
I wish someone would pay me mid-range eight figures not to work.
I'm sure he's gonna try and work again.
Yeah. I mean, like, the scandal has like really made him so
such
famous.
A name and like I think everybody knew who Chris Harrison was, but now that we're all talking about Chris Harrison, it's like, oh, you know who he was too? Like, you'll talk about it with someone random, it's like, how do you know who Chris Harrison is?
Yeah, and like I feel like there's so many unfinished loose ends, like things I have questions about. Like, it's so weird to me that like Chris Harrison is no longer on the franchise because of this big scandal that happened with Rachel Kirkconnell. And like Rachel Kirkconnell is like moving in with Matt. It just feels like, it just feels like I'm confused.
Yeah, I agree.
So.
But it's nice to just know what's going on in the franchise. And I'm sure they could have kept being like, you know, the pause. Like,
right,
obviously
hiatus.
He's not doing Bachelor in Paradise. I doubt he would be doing Michelle's season. And then it would just be more and more waiting. So now we know. And I'm sure they'll start looking to really fill the job permanently because I don't think these one-off characters are going to work.
That was going to be my next question. Do you think there'll be like a new, like maybe Emmanuel Acho becomes the new face?
I think that there should be. If they want stability, like I think that would get people excited if it was someone that people really like.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's a host that we don't know that well. So it's like their association is only The Bachelor still, just like how Chris Harrison only
was
did
initially.
The Bachelor.
Yes.
So I think that they can find someone great for the position.
Yeah,
I'm sure, you know, a million girls would kill for that job.
Literally. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see who does get the job.
Yeah, and if you're asking me who should get it, I think it should be The Snatchler. She's proven that she can talk about The Bachelor. She
time
can,
and time again.
Time and time again. So time time that's again. My pick.
I think that's a really good one.
Are you ready for our next story?
Yes, I am.
Trisha Paytas quits Frenemies podcast amid feud with Frenemy. Okay. YouTube sensation Trisha Paytas is stepping down from the popular weekly podcast Frenemies amid a disagreement over their conduct on the show. Please explain what's going on.
Trisha Paytas is a popular YouTuber.
Yes.
They've like had a very interesting career thus far. Very messy, very scandalous. But Trisha has like really found this very like good project for her. She joined the Frenemies podcast, which is a podcast produced by H3 Productions. I need you to just keep up because it's like a weird family circle.
Okay.
H3 Productions put together this podcast called Frenemies and hired Trisha as like the talent to host with this guy, Ethan, who owns H3 Productions.
Okay. So it's like TNN.
Yeah. Ethan is married to a woman named Hila.
Okay.
She's Israeli. I don't know. That doesn't matter. It's a fun fact. So this podcast blew up and really did great things for Trisha's career because they've kind of always had this like salacious scandal like aura to Trisha's brand. Like it's always been just kind of messy. But this podcast blew up. Ethan blew up with it. Like Ethan was a popular YouTuber creator before, but I think this podcast took them both to like a great level. People were obsessed with this podcast. Like I never watched it, but I've always seen like clips and I've always watched it's hysterical. Like Trisha's nuts. They dress up in these insane costumes and talk about serious things. It's very funny. H3 produces it. And on Monday, one more small fact. And then why people like love watching this journey for Trisha is because Trisha met a guy on H3, the podcast. He works for the podcast. And it's Hila's brother. So Trisha and Ethan, the hosts of the podcast,
dating someone.
They're siblings.
Yeah.
Hila's married. They have kids with Ethan. And Trisha just got engaged.
Okay.
So it's kind of become this like beautiful thing. And they've like fought on the podcast before. And like everyone always like freaks out because like the clips go viral. Trisha does struggle with BPD. They've been very open about their journey with mental health. So that's just the context that you need. Okay. So on Monday they did an episode and at the end of the episode, they do like a Dear Toasters, like a viewer advice. And Trisha says that they don't want to do this segment. Like they think it's stupid. They think it's like tacky. It's what people do when they don't have any more creative ideas. And it kind of started this like very weird contentious conversation about money and about the show. And how Ethan's like, that's so mean. Like, he hires, H3 Productions is his company. Trisha gets hired as talent. He was like, we work really hard, like, putting all these segments together. Like, that's, like, mean to say that you don't like our, like, advice segment. And then Trisha's like, well, don't say you do everything. And then Ethan's like, no, we do everything, but that's not what I said. And then Trisha's getting visibly upset, but then she keeps saying, like, I'm not upset. And so then Ethan's like, I feel like you're gaslighting me. Like, you're clearly upset. Like, let's just talk about it, you know? And then Trisha's like, you're gaslighting me, telling me how I'm feeling. So it's like, you're gaslighting, I'm gaslighting. Okay. The conversation gets very contentious and they really start talking about money. It's actually really interesting to hear how they split up the money. The show is very successful. It's an H3 production. They split AdSense revenue, podcast revenue on, it's a podcast and a YouTube show.
I've heard that.
We can relate. So they split it like 50-50, but they do take 5% from the overall thing for the production.
H3.
To pay all these employees who run the show. The employees being Trisha's fiance, Moses.
Right, Moses.
So Trisha's going on about how it's like not fair, how they don't deserve the 5%, like in front of the crew who's like literally working on the show. They're only asking for 5%, it's not a lot. So it gets very, very contentious. The episode's on Monday. Monday night, I guess they also do like a vlog series. I've never seen it. The crew says, we don't want to do the vlog. Like you were very rude to us, Trisha, like saying how we don't deserve our 5%. So they kind of like go on strike. Tuesday, the episode drops to the public. They have like a Patreon. So like people get to see it first on Monday. It drops on Tuesday.
Is it on Patreon or is
no, it's like a membership. I don't know what the infrastructure
just
is.
Just always like to know what tools people are
what
using.
What other creators are.
Yeah. 100%.
Tuesday, the episode drops. Boom, Trisha drops on her own channel a video, I'm leaving Frenemies. She said, you know, she said that like she's not gonna apologize for how, oh sorry, her pronouns are they, them, I'm really sorry. They said that they're not gonna apologize for how they feel, but their delivery was wrong. And so I do believe the Frenemies community has sided with Ethan because also in this fight that was on air, it was very awkward to watch. Trisha said Hila and Ethan just announced that they are having a baby. Mm-hmm. And I think it might be twins. Like, there was this whole announcement. And they made the episode last week, like, a lot about that. And Trisha was like, you know, you made the episode title pregnancy announcement, kind of like, you know, using me for clout, people thinking I'm pregnant. And it was just, like, not about Trisha at all. It was about, like, Ethan and Hila. And it just feels like this is what I think happened. No verification. I just think that they hired Trisha to be the star of the show. And they are, like, Trisha is insane. Like, she's talent oozing out of her pores. But the community, like, started to really love Ethan and fall in love with Ethan and Hila's love story. And, of course, everyone was, like, freaking out when they got pregnant. And I just think Trish was, like, I thought the show was about to, like, supposed to be about me. Like, he was very much supposed to be the captain of the ship and the serious one to kind of prop up Trish. But the fans, like, love both of them equally. And I just think there's been a lot of attention on Ethan and Hila because of the pregnancy and stuff. And they've fought before, like, with the siblings, and it's been really awkward, like, the couples fighting. Because Moses and Hila are sister and brother.
Yeah.
But, and then Ethan and Trish work together. It's actually, like, a really toxic, potentially.
No, yeah, but even though they're not working together anymore, all four of them, like, they're always going to be in each other's lives. Right. Or they should be.
And so right before this, like, people were, like, there were so many TikToks, like, glamorizing, like, how, you know, Trish is in the best place of her life. Like, she struggles a lot with mental health. She was dating Jason Nash.
Yes.
And she was, her and Ethan were the one who blew that whole, like, Dom, David Dobrik scam. Like, they started that. Like, they really did. So it was, like, a really influential podcast. And now I just don't know where we go from here. A lot of people are saying that, like, Trisha, like, always fake quits. Like, she'll be back. But they made a video, and it seems very real. And the frenemies people are, like, so upset. Trisha was trending all day on Twitter yesterday.
Yeah, that is upsetting, because
if you love a podcast and then it ends, like, people would be devastated if the toast ended.
Oh my God. And especially, like, in a day, like, you know, these weren't, I mean, I'm sure there were forces that were at play for a while, but just to have one bad episode and one disagreement and then to make the decision in 24 hours and then make it so publicly, you can't come back from that.
No, it was very erratic of Trisha.
Like, if anyone could, it would be Trisha.
Yes, that's so her. So a lot of people aren't
but
worried.
But this story is so big now. I've seen it everywhere. I don't know how you put the toothpaste back in the bottle. Tube.
Well, so Ethan is actually very good about, like, dealing with Trisha, because she is, you know, their own celebrity, you know, and they've kind of, like, stormed off the show before, and Ethan, like, handles Trisha perfectly. So they actually, I could see them, like, literally sitting down for another episode and pretending like nothing happened. Like, that's, like, they can do that.
I don't, maybe in the past, but I think that this particular story has reached a level that they couldn't just pretend like it didn't happen, but maybe they could have a rapprochement this on camera.
This isn't even the worst fight. Like, literally, they had a fight, like, a month ago that went viral. And Trisha called Ethan's wife, Hila, like, a bitch. Like, it was a family fight. Like, that's the worst type of fight to have publicly, like, airing your dirty laundry. I think that fight was worse than this one about money.
Yes, but I didn't hear about that fight.
Yeah, well, because Trisha didn't actually quit after that fight. She just, like, stormed out. And then the next day, she, like, apologized for what she said. For what they said.
Interesting. Well, as always, I really hope that they can work it out, because I hate to see a successful podcasting duo go under. I hate to see it.
Devastating.
I think that everyone, and they should have, like, they should renegotiate their terms.
Yeah.
And everyone should feel good about what they're doing.
But I think the setup they have is pretty fair.
I completely agree. Sounds as fair gets to me.
Trisha's hired as talent. Like, the studio, I believe, is in Ethan's house, but they bought a studio in downtown LA. Like,
no, it seems fair to me.
They produce other podcasts besides Frenemies,
by the way. But Trisha doesn't think that it's fair. So let's go back to the table and find a deal that works for everyone. Like, I'm sure Ethan really, and I saw his tweet, he really wanted to make this work.
Yeah.
That's what he tweeted, right?
I feel like the deal is fair.
Yes, I agree.
And you signed a contract.
But Trisha doesn't.
I think she might be being unreasonable. They might be being unreasonable.
I agree. But if you want the show, that's what you get when you hire talent. You get talent attitude.
Yeah. That's true.
So if they want to make it work, you got to get back to the table. But
Trisha might be coming back. We don't know.
Too much might have happened. Also, you say Trisha might be coming back, but that's only because, like, you're hoping they come back.
No, I think that, like, this is just, like, Trisha behavior. She's just kind of like, like, this is so Trisha, you know? Like, I actually feel like we could see Trisha come back 100%. Like, I really would not be surprised. They have fought worse. Like, I'm telling
After
you.
After everything that you've shared with me about the success of the podcast, and it sounds so great, I really hope that they come back. and all of them are able to make it work.
Me too, of course. Like, it was a beautiful thing for so long. Like, when the podcast was going well and their, you know, partners are siblings, like, it was great. They were a family.
Yeah. What category is the podcast in?
I don't know why. Probably comedy.
I just like to know, you know, where fellow podcasts.
I believe it's big, like, really big on YouTube and performs like decently as a podcast, but they get dressed up in like Beetlejuice. They look insane. Like, they're in that, they're having this fight, and Ethan is literally wearing like goblin face paint. And Trisha is dressed, I don't know what her costume was, what their costume was supposed to be, but it was like a lady who lunch, I don't know. It was insane. And that's like, the production value is very high and it's so funny, but I don't know.
Interesting. Okay, well, we'll keep you posted and Claudia will continue to explain it all.
Yes, constantly.
Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
Are you ready for our next story?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
ready. I really feel kept abreast.
Is it the next story that's brought to you by IP Vanish?
Yes, it is. Tell them, Claude.
Oh my God, because, you know, I was feeling a little like remiss, you know, maybe like slightly devastated, even heartbroken, mm-hmm. if I didn't let everyone know that today's show is sponsored by IP Vanish. What is IP Vanish? A virtual private network, a VPN for short. A VPN is a super important tool that helps you safely browse the internet. You can use a VPN on your computer, tablet, phone, even things like your Fire Stick when you're streaming media. When you use a VPN, all your data is encrypted. What you're reading, what you're searching, what you're watching, whatever it is that you're doing. That's important because what you're doing on the internet is absolutely nobody else's business, like even if you're just watching The Toast or Frenemies. IP Vanish helps you remain anonymous and secure on the internet. For listeners of our show, IP Vanish is offering an incredible 65% off, just $3.49 for the first month or $31.49 for the year. Here's everything you get with IP Vanish. Anonymous IP addresses, you can circumvent any online censorship, you can get protection when using public Wi-Fi, and 24/7 support. Email with them, chat with them, even call them. They're always there to help. So go to ipvanish.com/toast and claim your 65% savings. They have plans starting at just $3.49 or $31.49 for the whole year. Now is the time to sign up because with our discount and their current promotional offerings, you can get a VPN for 65% off their usual offering. IP Vanish is the best of the best, rated 4.7 out of 5 on Trustpilot with more than 6,000 reviews. So again, that's ipvanish.com/toast to get the deal and start protecting yourself online.
Love it. Thank you for that. Our next story, Teyana Taylor is the first Black woman to be named Maxim's Sexiest Woman Alive. Teyana Taylor is making history with her latest magazine cover. On Monday, the 30-year-old entertainer was crowned Maxim's Sexiest Woman Alive, topping the title's Hot 100 list for 2021. Taylor covers the issue in a hacked-off Hanes tank top and vintage army pants, showing off her six-pack abs. I saw Teyana Taylor wearing army pants and flip-flops, so I bought army pants and flip-flops.
I mean, this is such a well-deserved award. Like, after that Kanye West music video, like, she was literally like everyone's body goals, mm-hmm. and she's a great selection for Maxim Hot 100. I did not know that they never had a Black woman win, which is like crazy, but this is fabulous. I get like a little bit of PTSD when we talk about Maxim Hot 100. Do you know why?
I do know why. I do know why, and I will tell you, since it is my fault. Since I am the cause of it. So when we were doing The Breath, so that was probably 4 years ago, Maxim released their Hot 100, and their number one was Hailey Baldwin at the time. And this was really before, you know, she popped off in the way that she has.
She was like a guest model.
Yeah, this was pre-Style Me Maeve. Like
Pre-Bieber, pre-Shawn Mendes, right, at the Met Gala.
And she was just like another celebrity spawn who was naturally good looking and like, naturally thin,
rich,
and tall.
Yeah.
And so I said that I felt kind of like meh about the cover, mm-hmm. whatever. You were into it, you thought it was,
yes,
a good choice.
I've always loved Hailey.
This was also before the Met Gala where she wore that pink Alexander Wang dress that really changed everything for me about her,
and it did chase kind of like the frontier of fashion.
Yeah, and like with a little thong poking out. Like, so after, cute. I did a 180 on, not that I had so far to come with her, I just was like pretty meh. Like,
she did like a 90, not a 180.
Yeah, I just turned a little bit.
Just like looked over your shoulder.
Anyway, so I was pretty mad. You know, we used to post about stories that we shared on the show, and we would post them to our Instagram, and in a rookie mistake,
Jackie posted it.
I posted that she was Maxim's Hot 100, and The Breath felt meh about it, and I tagged her. Which is like a weird fucking thing to do.
Yep.
And then she commented, and she was like, well, good thing you don't pick the cover.
Well, good thing it's not up to you.
And I was like, oh, yeah.
I saw it, and I wanted to kill you. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, we get one comment from Hailey Bieber. Like, one.
That's the one.
And that's
why. And you know what? That's why it's so good that we rebranded, because if she ever comes across our page again, she won't realize that we're the ones who felt meh. And I just want to say, like, I feel completely different about Hailey Bieber than I used to feel.
She won't recognize us.
She's really set herself apart.
She won't recognize us. Like, I have a new chin. You have new eyebrows. Like, we're two different girls than we were on The Breath.
I used to have a bob, and now I have the longest hair on earth.
Oh, like, by the way, we are truly irrecognizable.
Because we're running from that.
I'm running from myself. Like, as much as I actually loved doing The Morning Breath, like, we had such funny times. Like, we had such good shows. Like, it was really, like, really fun to do. Like, I actually can't even, like, look at some of the clips or the episodes because, like, I was so ugly. Not only ugly, I gave no fucks about the way that I looked. Like, I rolled out of bed. I didn't, like, run an iron through my hair. Like, I just did natural hair, big, thick fucking eyeliner that was, like, so uneven. The same jeans every day. Dirty jeans. Which, I stand by that decision. This big mole on my face. Like, I just, like, had no regard for how I looked and presented myself. And as much as I, like, look back on that and I'm like so ashamed, I'm also jealous of like the freedom I probably had. Like, I sit here and I do my best to like be hysterical but also like look like the best that I possibly can. Like, I'm always touching my hair, I'm fixing up my lipstick. It's exhausting. And like, that girl was so free. Like, she didn't give a flying fuck what she looked like.
Yeah, but also in your defense, now, back then we had touch-ups, we had hair and makeup touch-ups, so you could roll out of bed and someone was gonna like make you look kempt.
Yeah, but they didn't.
But they did. Like, I feel like they did. Moral of the story, you would have looked worse.
100%. 100%.
So, yeah, those were good times, but I agree. And it's just, like, so interesting to watch the clips, like, my hair so
no,
short,
we're
my
so,
eyebrows.
We're so different.
Light. We're so different.
And you would think, like, I actually look so different. And I really don't do, like, a ton of plastic surgery. Like, I get, like, literally once a year Botox in my forehead. That does not change the way you look. And a little bit of lip filler. Like, I did also get my chin done.
The chin changed everything. And the lips, like, thank God.
You know what? When I first got lip filler, I was like, this is so unnecessary, but I just want to be like Sheena. Like, you know, I just want to be like a cool Instagrammer, like blogger, reality star. And I really didn't think that I needed it, but it was like a fun thing to do. And now when I go through my time hop and I see those curly little lips, like when I smile, like that top one used to curl up. I'm like, oh my God, like, I'm so grateful
no, like,
that I did this.
Actually, you didn't need lips like for Instagram. You needed them to balance
to
out
smile.
Your face.
Yeah. No, and like, I guess maybe that's like kind of what's toxic about plastic surgery, because it never bothered me before. Like, I never looked at my lips and was like, they're too small. But now I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I used to leave those house with those little tiny little thin little fucking curly ass lips.
Yeah. That is probably what's toxic about plastic surgery. But aren't you better? Glad you look better.
100%.
Yeah.
Thinking maybe I'll get a little more.
Anyways, moral of the story is Hailey Baldwin Bieber, like, you have totally proven me wrong. You aren't anything but meh.
And the moral of the story is that, like, I just want to, like, distance myself from you. Like, I have been, like, obsessed since the day I met her. And I just don't want, like, your, like, you know, Hailey Baldwin drama, like, to ooze on me. Like,
yeah, no, but it's not my drama anymore. Like, it's The Breath.
Oh, are you letting go of the drama?
No. Like, I left it at The Breath.
Okay, because I still have trauma. How we got here is we're talking about Maxim Hot 100. Yes. Like, I still have trauma tied to it. So I think we need to, like, just kind of collectively let
we
that
need
trauma
to
go.
Collectively let it go. It's so important. Like, if that's what you're holding on to, I can't imagine the other things that you're holding on to in your life.
Have we met? Like, I'm literally, like, I only remember all the worst things that have ever happened to me. Like, sometimes I forget, like, I bartended on Watch Happens Live, because there's no room in my brain for, like, the fun things I've done or the things I've accomplished. Only, like, the weird things I've said at parties and the times, like, I've gotten in trouble on Instagram. You know, like, that lives in my mind rent-free.
100%. I wanted to go and find, like, who were, like, last year's Maxim Hot 100 and everything. Are you interested in that?
Yeah, I'm always interested in it. I always just feel like Megan Fox wins, like, every year. She's so Maxim.
Oh, do you?
Also, about Teyana Taylor, I just want to say, like, obsessed. And she is married to Iman Shumpert.
Yes.
Who used to play on the Knicks. Like, I don't know what he plays for anymore. But I just, like, stan them as a couple. I have a ship in the port. It's pretty big.
Totally. Okay, so I don't know if they had one for 2020, but 2019 was Olivia Culpo.
Okay.
2018 was Kate Upton.
Obsessed.
2017 was Hailey Baldwin.
Just skip over that one.
2016 was Stella Maxwell. Remember when she was everywhere?
What happened to her? She was dating Miley. Like,
and she was in that song that played all the time.
What song?
Got a Stella Maxwell right beside me.
Oh.
That lyric.
I don't know that one.
You guys know it. You'll know if you heard it.
Yeah, for sure.
Candace Swanpole, 2015, Taylor Swift. Were you aware of this?
Wait, what? Is there like a sexy pic of her? She doesn't do that.
For sure, there is.
Let me see.
I have to go and get it.
Wow, you truly learn something new every day about your favorite icons.
You really do. 2014, Candace Swanpole. 2013, Miley Cyrus. 2012, Bar Raffaelli.
Oh my God. I love Bar Raffaelli. What happened to her? Is she in jail?
She had like tax issues.
Yeah, but I think they like let her go.
I don't know. It was
remember
not
when she dated Leo? She was like the hottest thing for like a couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, in 2012, she was the number one.
She was literally the hottest thing.
She was the number one hot.
Can you find the Taylor Swift photo? I'm just like genuinely curious.
Yes. And then 2011 was Rosie Huntington Whiteley. Did I say that right? I'm typing and reading at the same time.
Yeah. I think I actually know which one it is. Oh yeah. I mean, that's like so editorial. Like Maxim usually has like big titties and stuff.
Yeah.
But that's so not Taylor Swift. And I love that she made it her own. Like obsessed.
Obsessed. 2010, Katy Perry. 2009, Olivia Wilde. 2008, Marissa Miller. 2007, Lindsay Lohan. 2006 and 2005, Eva Longoria.
Deserved. Agreed. Speaking of Lindsay Lohan, she's like gearing up for some sort of comeback. She's in like a Netflix movie and she did this like stunning photo shoot for some magazine
interview, I think.
Obsessed. Like, I'm here for the Lindsay Lohan return to glory.
Agreed. 2004, Jessica Simpson. This is okay. Such an interesting list. It's just a moment in time. I'm going to just get to
2000. I'm like over it.
2003, Christina Aguilera. 2002, Jennifer Garner. 2001, Jessica Alba. 2000, Estella Warren.
It definitely is like a symbolic of the culture, like what was going on in pop culture for those years, like the Jessica Alba, Jessica Simpson years, mm-hmm. the Jennifer Garner, like I remember that.
I just want to say, like, Kim Kardashian's never been on the cover. Never been number one.
I feel like now she, like, her brand is so different, but like for so many years, like,
she could have been.
That was literally her.
Yeah.
That is weird.
Okay. Well, are you ready for our next story?
Yeah.
Now that we've exhausted the Hot 100.
Yeah.
Ariana Grande congratulates her brother Frankie on an engagement.
Yes.
Love you both so, so much, she said. So I know you'll be so excited to talk about this because you love Frankie Grande. You're just
what do you mean?
Number one fan.
No, I'm not.
Like, no, I know.
Yeah, no.
I haven't given you the opportunity to talk smack about him in a while.
Well, honestly, I do find him annoying, but it's Pride Month, so I'm not going to be, like, you know, like, obnoxious to Frankie Grande.
Yes, and this is some really happy news. Yes. The 27-year-old pop star congratulated her big brother, Frankie Grande, and his fiance, Hale Leon, on their engagement, which was exclusively revealed by People on Tuesday. She said, "The most beautiful, love you both so, so much."
But that's cute that they're, like, getting married at the same time.
Yes.
That's sweet.
That is sweet. The photos are really sweet. And we just love a little bit of love news.
Yeah, we do. And we love, like, Ari always being so supportive of her brother, even when he's, like, thirsty. And honestly, like, people clown on Frankie Grande, like, myself included. But if I was Ariana Grande's brother or
sister,
would
you act any differently?
Worse. So, like, we need to give Frankie Grande, like, a little room, like, a little grace. Like, he is doing what we would all do naturally. Like, you're gay and your sister is a gay icon. Like, how does one person, internalize all of that. Like, it's very chaotic, and Frankie Grande is just doing the best he can.
No, I understand. And it's also, like, Frankie Grande, if he wasn't Ari's brother, like, would be her biggest fan. So, like, he's her biggest fan, like, gets to go to all these award shows. Like, of course he's going to act out the way that he does. Like, he's having the time. He's just a fan.
No, 100%. Like, he's the luckiest fan in the world. And I just think, like, we all need to operate in a world where, like, we're just a little bit more understanding of Frankie Grande's chaotic energy, because it's like he's literally doing the best he can, and just think of the circumstances, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure he's like also trying to play it cool. Imagine how much more he has to give.
No, he's probably like, when he goes to these award shows with Ari, like, there's probably so many things going through his mind. So honestly, I'm making an official decree, like, I'm going to operate in a world that's a little bit more forgiving of Frankie Grande. Like, I really am.
That's,
I
just feel so, like, beautiful.
I always see jokes about him, like, on TikTok and stuff, and I'm just gonna, like, especially jokes about, like, him doing SoulCycle. Like, I am going to give him a little break.
Love that. What a beautiful story. Are you ready for our fifth and final story?
It's the final story. Do 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 boom boom. Do 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 cha cha.
I'm surprised the podcast reviews don't say stop fucking singing that song.
I don't think that they would, because it's stunning.
Oh, okay. I mean, I think it gives us the energy, the boost that we need to report the fifth and final story.
Me as well.
You know, because sometimes we lull. Do 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 do.
Boom.
Okay.
Every time not to harp on the song that's obviously annoying people. Every time.
I actually haven't seen one complain about it.
Me neither. I actually even saw one comment asking us to finish keep going and finish the entire song. But every time we do that song and I add my weird, like, do 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 pa pa, I'm literally Professor Ed Schnabley from School of Rock.
100%.
Because like when he gets them all up in the front of the class for the first time and he's like, just goong, 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 goong on the bass. And then he's like, joong, chugga, joong, chugga, joong on the drums. Like, that's literally me.
100%.
I think that I need to reevaluate like who my idols are because Professor Ed Schnabley is 100% up there.
No, I totally.
The fake one, not the real one.
Of course. The real one sucks.
No, the real one sucks. And you know who you look like today? Sarah Silverman. She's like always dressed in that movie like very long dress, like, oh, she's really? So proper.
Well, look at me.
Hey,
look at me. Another Jack Black reference.
Also, not to go down a completely different rabbit hole, but I really feel like not enough time and respect is given to the acting career of Jack Black. Like, he's just like that funny guy, but like Shallow Hal is like a transformative fucking movie. School of Rock is so iconic. Like, I just think he needs The Holiday.
The Holiday. Also, whenever we like riff, I get I feel like in The Holiday, like, do-do-do-do, do-do-do-do, like, no, that's, like, where I feel like I'm having, like, date, like, I'm in the movie, I'm like, do-do-do-do.
So I just feel like this episode, like, was really integral for us to, like, put respect on Jack Black's name and Frankie Grande's name, and I feel really good about the work that we've done here today.
100%. Fifth and final story, a little book news. Mm. The Jonas Brothers are writing a memoir called Blood.
Blood.
What's it from? It's from an old YouTube video, right?
Yes, Blood. Yeah.
Blood.
thank you for reminding me.
And I think that's why they called that. I think
an homage.
The book is an oral history of that YouTube video.
Oh, how interesting.
Wherein they also compared the 2013 breakup of the Jonas Brothers to a tsunami. So Joe Jonas shared a little excerpt from
Blood. An expert?
He shared an excerpt from Blood on his Instagram.
Are you okay?
It's just so funny.
Blood.
You think that kid's going to be on the cover?
On Instagram, he shared where he recalled the intense emotions felt when he and his brothers, Nick and Kevin, decided to take a break from their band. Written from Joe's viewpoint, The Cake by the Ocean Crooner compares...
Wait, it's just his book?
No, I think it's by the three of them, but I'm assuming they go in and out of their own perspectives. I'm sure they copied the Lady Gang format.
Jackie, I was literally about to say, like, I hope that they read the Lady Gang book because I feel like it's actually sometimes very chaotic to write a book with multiple people. Like, there's so many different perspectives, and sometimes they try to make it the same voice. The Lady Gang book was perfectly done, like, how to write a book from three different perspectives. So I really feel like they should work with Kelty, Jack, and Becca.
I totally agree. He said, "The tsunami inside of me built until it broke and crashed through everything in its path. But sometimes things need to break down so they can be built up again on a stronger foundation." He said,
Sounds like a little corny.
He says, "As we grow through our lives, I know I'll always have my brothers as family, as friends, and as blood." Literally, that's what it says.
Blood. Yeah, I mean, I didn't need a Jonas Brothers book, but I'll gladly welcome it into my space.
Does anyone else feel like they're trying to make as much money in the past 3 years as possible so they can, like,
Two Amazon specials, two tours, a book, 100%.
So they can, like, stop working again?
No, I don't know if that's the point, but I do feel like they're constantly doing the most at all times. Like, and their music is really good, so I'm not mad at all about it. Their tour was unbelievable. Yeah. Like, one of the best shows I've been to. I will definitely be going to the next one. But I agree, they're doing, like, a lot.
Yeah. I'm just curious what the strategy is. I do feel like they're working really hard so that they can take time off maybe in a few years, especially as they all have, like, young kids. Families. But that is the vibe that I'm getting. Like, let's, like, just make the most money. Which I also understand, because a lot of people, like, things have an expiration date. And their comeback was so strong.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just, like, a reunion. It was like, no, we're going to do this again. And the fanfare is just as it was in, like, 2007. So... Yep. I can respect them collecting all those checks.
Me too, but I definitely got the same vibe from, like, all of their media. Like, it's just a lot.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cool.
And, like, a book honestly does not sound like a natural thing because, yes, they have a story to tell the breakup, but they literally did it in a two-part documentary. Like, oh, speaking of documentaries, I watched the Pink documentary. I did not finish it. It's so good. Did you know Pink is Jewish?
Wow.
She was like, oh, I feel so guilty. Well, I'm Jewish. That's all we have. And I'm like, wait, rewind.
No, I didn't know that.
You're Jewish? Like, I just didn't know that. Like, live for it. It's such a good documentary. I'm only, like, halfway through. I just do wish there was more performances. It's not a concert DVD. Like, it's truly a documentary with, like, tiny pieces of performances in it.
Interesting, because I listened to the album from the documentary on Spotify, so I thought it was a lot of live performances. Because
maybe what, at the end there's more.
That's what I listened to. I actually like used it as a soundtrack for a run. It was really inspirational because she's also like talking and inspiring everyone around her.
And she did on tour. I didn't see her on tour. She did. I don't know if it's a cover. Did she write that song? Shut your mouth and run me like a river.
It's on the album. Oh, it's not her song.
It's a cover.
Yeah.
She did it so well.
Yeah.
And it's just really interesting to see, first of all, that the dynamic between her and her husband, because of course it's, you know, very non-traditional. She's the breadwinner. He's not like a stay-at-home dad, but he, when they're on tour, like takes the brunt of like the work while she's, you know, while she's rehearsing and going to the stadium, and she tries to keep her kids involved as much as possible. But like whatever you think of like Pink's life on the road, like that's not it. Like it's literally like motherhood, and then she like runs away for 2 hours to do a concert and then comes back to motherhood. Like it's actually really crazy. I have a lot of respect for her. Being a mom is like her number one priority. Like she's such a mom. Like she's honestly a great mom, very introspective. She's like, she just seems like a person who's been through like a lot of therapy, and she's like really into her emotions. But she likes that kid Willow 100 times better. Then I didn't even, well, I'm only halfway through, but like literally the other kids like might as well have not existed.
But Willow's older.
Oh my God, I'm choking. That's what I get.
That's what you get for saying.
Yeah, no, she did explain how like.
Yeah, you're choking on your words.
God is smiting me and I fully accept that. She did explain how like for the first 5 years of Willow's life, like it was just her and Willow.
You're not allowed to speak on the children then.
No, I'm just trying to explain what she said.
No, but that's. Maybe that's a sign.
No, but what she said was, like, for the first 5 years, it was just her and Willow. And then, like, this new baby came in. And a baby's like a narcissist. Like, a baby just lives in... She said that, not me. Like, the baby lives in its own world, doesn't, like, think to be jealous of their older sister. Whereas, like, Willow, who was, like, the center of the universe for 5 years. So that's why she put so much energy into, like, Willow's well-being and self-worth. She's just really, like, worried about her kids, like, having high self-worth.
I understand that, but I also feel like for whatever she's doing and the kids are running around, like the older one is going to get to do more and be around more.
Until the other kid, whose name I literally don't even know.
Is it Sage?
You know, that does sound right. Whatever.
Okay, cool.
It's really good. You will like it. Like if you have respect for Pink, like you will just get more respect for Pink.
Oh my
God,
you guys, my contemplate runneth over. I think.
It's not pertinent like right now.
No, I know, but like I need to watch Why Women Kill. I need to watch Pink documentary. I need to watch Summer House. I need to watch Bold Type, and I need to watch Younger. And that's only the things I can remember right now.
Yeah, I would say start with Why Women Kill and Summer House.
That's my plan.
Okay.
That's my plan.
And
those were the past five stories, and you needed to know them.
Let's dive into our TV recap right before our interview with Kevin O'Leary. And our TV recap is brought to you by Manscaped, our go-to for men's below-the-waist grooming products. Manscaped has a new product. New product alert. It's time to stop, drop, and order this brand new shaving kit that they just launched. Introducing the Ultra Smooth Package, a specialized groin shaving kit to help your man buff, protect, and smooth his most sensitive areas. They have a new crop shaver, a crop exfoliator, and crop gel. The name of all their products is so funny, and they have such great branding. And then when the product comes, like, you will be shocked. It is literally some of the best men's grooming products. Ben is obsessed with everything that I got for him, and it all came in this, like, sickening leather, like, very manly, like travel case.
Yeah.
Because I have so many pouches, and when we travel, like, I give pink ones to Ben just to, like, put all the shit in, but now Manscaped has literally the best one.
Love that.
So Manscaped is the originators of the electric ball hair trimmer. They now have a razor and set for men to get you trimmed from front to back. So they can stop using your razors. They can start using their own. Crop exfoliator is infused with ingredients that can soothe, clear, and keep the skin on and around your groin feeling refreshed. The crop exfoliator can help reduce the risk of ingrown hairs and delicate places. Sometimes men are just like so rough with their like body. And Manscaped is taking care of men in your life. So
yeah.
It's a great gift for, a little weird for Father's Day, but why not?
Well, if you're like, you could give it to Ben for Father's Day.
He's Theo's dad. They also have a crop gel so you can see where you're shaving with their unique clear shaving gel just for the groin. It's pretty remarkable. With four essential oils, it's like the spa treatment with every time you shave, and it smells super nice. Ladies, this is the perfect gift to get for you and your man, and men, your balls will thank you. It's time to get up close and personal with the best tools for the job, the Ultra Smooth Package from Manscaped. And you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code TOAST at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code TOAST at manscaped.com. Smooth it out, fellas, with Manscaped. She will thank you. I have to say, it's really like the best gift to get for your husband for an anniversary or your boyfriend. It's probably the best thing I've ever gotten for Ben that he uses every single day.
No, same. She will thank you and he will thank you. And if men are really hard to shop for, like, yes, especially when you need the good gifts, this is such a good gift. Like, keep a tab in your mind for when you need a gift.
All right. The Real Housewives of New York was on last night, the second to last episode in the Hamptons. And it was like chaos.
I can't believe we're still in the Hamptons. It's as if they're like
drawing it out.
No, they're like on Jersey Shore where they're just like in a house. It's summer house.
I mean, I guess it's better than like those shitty episodes we were getting in the city when like no one was in the same place.
Yeah.
So it's better. But it's so chaotic. Like the group is just, you know, when you start to hang out with like people for too long, like you get that annoying feeling with them. Like they're obviously having that feeling. Mm-hmm. I thought the conversations in the beginning of the episode between Ebony and Luann, I thought were pretty productive. Like I do think Luann is well-intentioned, but like she was being like Leah was screaming. Everyone was screaming. No one was calling anyone angry. And then Ebony, and I think like Ebony really explained it in a way that Luann could digest, because Luann has, and actually Ebony said this perfectly, Luann has such a big ego, like in fights and stuff, like she can't see anything but her wanting to be right. So even though there was something more important happening with the conversation, she's like, well, will you apologize to me? It's like, girl, like it's not about that. Like let it go. It, also the conversation that they had at that brunch, like I couldn't even follow it. Like right. What were they saying?
I have no idea what point anyone like
was trying to make.
Luann was trying to make with education and Christianity
and class,
and like what she was trying to say. She kept telling Ebony, I didn't say this, I didn't say that. But what, so what were you saying?
And honestly, like the conversation was irrelevant. And when Ebony was trying to explain, like Luann, I do think Luann ingested it, but also she could not get over like, well, will you apologize to me for what you said about education? Like get over it. Like,
yeah.
It's really not that deep.
It's not that deep. And also, it's not subjective. Like, she has more of a formal education.
100%. And then the episode, like, kind of calmed down for a little bit and then, like, really picked up at the end. And I really feel like there was a lot of interesting things going on with the Heather and Leah of it all.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling very conflicted because I actually really like Heather. She was giving me, like, such cringy vibes the whole episode. Like, and I think Ebony also said it perfectly. Like, Heather does mean well. Like, I really don't think Heather, like, I think Heather was trying to help everyone, was trying to smooth out the situation, was trying to be supportive to Ebony. But some of the shit she was saying, like, was really, like, cringe 101. And then when she came in and was like, you are so articulate, by the way. Like, that was like a low point. That was really awkward.
But I don't know where Heather leaves the show, but I can understand how and why she got
it's
to that point.
It's the Leah of it
ever
all.
Since she's come to the house, like really nobody wants her there, and she's really being nothing but like trying to be nice, positive, supportive, nice. And I feel like when she's, you know, jumping into the conversation and saying we just need to listen to each other, like she's really trying to help, and like no one else is taking that POV because everybody is like
divided. No, but you're right, Heather is like genuinely like a nice, I think, like a nice person who means well and just wants everyone to like be happy. That can be annoying. 100%.
100%.
Especially when you're in a bad place like Leah is. And when
why does Leah just not like her to begin with? And then what Leah said about like Heather having to be the moral authority on everything, having to contribute to every conversation, like having to be right and know so much, like I could also see how that could be annoying, but does not justify that reaction.
No, Leah gave a perfect analysis of like why Heather can be annoying. Like she said, she has to be in every conversation, and not only that, she has to be like the expert on everything. And it's annoying, just like talk. You don't have to be the expert on race. You don't have to be the expert on the election. It is a really annoying characteristic, and I think Leah like read her personality perfectly, but Leah's reaction was so unwarranted, and I actually felt so bad for Heather. Like, what a miserable fucking trip. Like, and really all spearheaded by Leah, and it's like, what does Leah have against Heather? Like, it's so bizarre, and I think it's a combination of just Leah and Heather being, like, two different people, and, like, Leah just not liking her, and then also Leah...
Leah and Heather are so similar.
Also, Leah, like, being in a bad place.
Yes, definitely, and I understand how it's annoying that Heather is the moral authority on everything, but she's a good person, well-intentioned, like literally hasn't said a rude thing to anyone, like constantly just trying to like be a team player. And so
if anything, she's annoying, but like she's not mean.
No,
she's not mean-spirited.
No,
she's not
that, like, and the way that Leah treated her, like that's how you treat like an evil villain.
Like, oh, don't leave me in the car with this. And I loved when Heather finally fought, like stood up for herself and was like, oh, shut up, bitch. Like, we're just sitting in the car. And then she threw the flowers and stormed out. She's so irrational sometimes. You know, it's weird with Leah because I can't decide, like, if I think she's the most irrational person, because sometimes she's just insane. And then sometimes she'll say something that is just like so poignant. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you are so clear-headed.
Yeah.
Which one is it? I literally don't know. Get you a girl who can do both.
I think it's both. And I also think, like, I don't know how she could have not gone on the trip, but like to have to film, it's not fair to the other ladies to have
She should have left a while ago.
It's just not fair, like, to have this person who is so deeply mourning to also have to be a housewife, but there's not enough women for her to just leave.
Yeah. It's weird.
It's weird, but I loved her outfit, her carry outfit.
The pants.
Yeah, no, again, not for me, but I think it was Sonia who said she's dressed as Leah.
And speaking of Sonia, I think my favorite part of the episode and why, like, I'm like really liking Ebony so far is, like, she's being so kind to Sonia and literally, like, made me realize, like, no one has ever been, like, outwardly, like, nice to Sonia. And when she, like, called her friend to set her up and she just keeps telling Sonia that she's worthy, I actually really believe, like, that Sonia needed to hear that.
I agree.
And I think it's so nice. And I'm, like, so surprised by, like, how I never realized how, like, all the women are, like, so mean to Sonia. Like,
yeah, they're just always putting her down. And, like, I think she's always, even when someone is her friend and confidant on the show, like, she's always the sidekick. Like, she's never the main character.
That's,
like,
so true.
She's such a main character.
She's a star. I mean, when she was, like, supporting Ebony and, like, talking about race, I was like, this girl, like, she was just being so everything of the sort.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, it's time. It's Sonia's time.
It's Sonia's time. I agree. That was one of my favorite aspects of the episode. I love that Ebony, like, sees. And when Sonia said, like, I feel seen, like, I love that Ebony sees her.
That was a beautiful moment on the beach. Like, truly beautiful. Stunning.
Also, that activity of fishing and then, like, a little beachside lunch looked so fun.
They're doing a good job with the planning on this particular trip. Like, the Hamptons usually, like, they don't do anything. But I love this idea of a pageant.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't think Leah goes. I didn't see her in the preview.
Yeah.
She shouldn't. She's miserable.
She shouldn't. We'll see.
But I agree. Like, after this trip, Heather, I don't believe films anymore. Like, why the fuck would she?
Why the fuck would she? But and I'm upset about it because I think that they didn't give her a chance. And I think that she is a nice person.
I think she has potential. And I think she's a nice person, too. The podcast stuff is, like, annoying. But, like, who cares? Everyone talks shit. Like, that's not a real thing.
Who cares?
Like, I talk shit about literally everyone I know. Even people I, like, absolutely adore.
Right.
Doesn't mean I don't like you. I just, like,
I just had something to say.
I'm just a bitch. Like, normalize talking shit about people, like, that you like. It's, like, really not a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't talk shit about you, though.
Oh, thanks. I don't talk shit about you.
Liar. That's our show.
That is our show. And you know what? We're going to end it because you need to go and listen to this interview with Mr. Wonderful.
Yeah. So a reminder that if you're listening as a podcast, it is just coming up right after this. It's also available on YouTube. He was in studio with us. We did a wine tasting. It's a really great video. So if you can, I would suggest heading over to YouTube, but both options are so premium. And
can't go wrong.
We loved having him. It's such a fun interview. You guys are going to love it. So check that out. And the Dear Toaster segment that we usually do on Wednesdays is going to be tomorrow just so we can even things out a little bit, you know?
100%. We shall see you tomorrow.
Have a great day, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Welcome back to The Morning Toast. We are so excited to be sitting down with someone we very much respect and talk about all the time here at The Morning Toast. It is Kevin O'Leary, also known as Mr. Wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Wonderful, for being here.
I'm so happy to be here. This is wonderful.
It is wonderful.
It's wonderful on wonderful.
Yes.
That's great.
Can you tell us, you brought us a gift. You set up this entire little moment. What is going on here?
Well, today's a very special day in New York. And I haven't been to New York for over a year because of the whole COVID thing. But today, my wine company is going public on NASDAQ through a SPAC. In other words, it got acquired into a public company.
Oh.
And that's a very big day for us.
Wow.
We have been growing and growing and growing for 7 years. We're now one of the largest wine companies in North America. And this is a big moment because we'll be making lots of announcements at 4 o'clock when I ring the closing bell.
Wow.
Any sneak peeks for us?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. But let me just put on my very important elements when you're in the wine business. You know, just a little je ne sais quoi.
Oh.
Right?
That
looks this
great.
Is my test de vin. Let me explain what this is. This is when I'm in the cellar because I blend all the wines, or at least the O'Leary wines you're seeing. We go into the oak caskets and we take a little siphon called the thief and put a little bit into here, let it mix with the air, taste it, and then spit it out. Because if you do that for every barrel, you're gonna get really wasted.
Yes.
So that's the whole idea. So the test of envy has become the symbol of winemaking all around the world. And there's very famous organizations like the Chevalier de Testavin.
I love when you say that on Shark Tank.
I'm a member of, and those of us who blend wines. Now, these two wines I brought to celebrate with, these are my most award-winning wines and my biggest sellers. My Chardonnay It's more of the Montrachet style, which is the French style of making Chardonnay. Very crisp, very light, less oak. And then my incredible Cabernet Sauvignon, which has won award after award after award.
Wow.
And even Andy, our cameraman, when he was proposed to his fiancée, he took all the insurance necessary, which was two glasses of this.
Oh, my God.
And she immediately said, yes, I'll marry you. That's what happened.
Oh, wow.
And you know what? Like, I feel like you've kind of made a mark for yourself in Shark Tank as the wine guy. And when I met you, I feel like a lot of people don't know this, but it's pretty common. You and your wife taught me that you can tell what kind of wine is in the bottle based on the shape of the bottle. Is that correct?
You can. This is the classic French Cabernet, and that's the classic Chardonnay. Now, what's happened in America, you know, the most popular wines today are the Cabernet Sauvignon Red and the Chardonnay. Chardonnay exploded when they started growing the grapes in California decades ago, and they started competing globally. And California Chard started kicking French Chard's butts a lot in international contests where it's blind taste testing. So the wine industry, the American wine industry, particularly in Washington State, Sonoma Valley, Napa Valley, it's really a big business now. Mm-hmm. But there's an old joke about the wine business. If you want to become a millionaire in the wine business, start as a billionaire. Because everybody blows their brains out. They make it a labor of love. I'm in it to make money.
Yeah.
And the only way you can make money in the wine business is have huge scale, be able to ship millions of cases, be able to fulfill Costco and Target, my own wines. And the new trend, which we've really blown up big, is 46 states allow you to ship directly to your customer. Remember, a case of wine weighs 39 pounds.
Yeah.
So if you get it direct, it's coming right to your door. And I have built that business up to being the largest direct consumer in the world.
Wow.
At least in North America. I can't say the globe yet because I don't know what they're doing in China.
Right.
But yeah. I'll kick the Chinese butts too.
But in COVID, I mean, direct to your home wine is
everything.
The answer.
Yeah. And what happened was people didn't stop drinking wine during COVID, but what really got crushed was our business to restaurants.
Yeah.
And that's when we replaced it with the direct consumer and blew that business up even bigger.
Yeah.
And now people are saying, I don't want to, you know, carry 12 bottles back from the store. Just ship me another case, Mr. Wonderful.
Yeah.
And I oblige.
So I think one of my favorite interesting facts about you is now you're conquering wine. You've very much made yourself the wine connoisseur. But what you don't get enough credit for is you were also the original inventor of a childhood staple of ours, the Oregon Trail.
Yes, the Oregon Trail, Rita Rabbit, Where in the World's Carmen San Diego, all those titles, yes. And that's how I came up. That was my first business, was educational software.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was it. And we used to develop all kinds of titles. You know, Oregon Trail was an incredible product because it started in Minneapolis, I think Minnesota. And I may have forgotten exactly which city, but I remember when we bought the title, we acquired it, I was blown away by how rich the storytelling was in it.
Yes, your ox died a sedentary. It was crazy.
Yeah, you know, people would try and get through the brutal lifestyle of moving west in that time. But we invested a lot of money into it and made it one of the standards of 110,000 school buildings in America.
Yes, and
we were among those schools.
Right, it's literally a cornerstone, like a staple of millennial, like early education. I like have very fond memories of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We sold that company for $4.2 billion.
Very nice.
And I started with nothing in the basement, you know, sort of a garage thing. And the 10 of us that were founders, that was our big liquidity event.
Yeah.
And since then, I've made many mistakes, but also made a couple of good investments, too. So it was a really big, it was a big moment for us because we really had nothing. And then boom. And I remember the day we went back in the office and I said to everybody, what are you going to do? We can all retire. And everybody said, I don't want to retire.
Yeah.
Let's keep going.
So you entered the wine business as a billionaire.
Well, yes. but I've really learned a lot from the wine business. Most of the companies that I've made money with have been run by women that I've invested in, and the wine business included. I remember when it started, it was actually a Shark Tank deal years and years ago called Zips Wine, which was a single-serve wine.
Oh,
do you remember
the lid.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You guys went back and forth,
and it was one of the famous, first time a guy ever came back twice.
Yes.
But I'll tell you the story of that. The day after that aired, and I won the deal, I thought the place to get this into would be Costco.
Yeah.
And there's a very famous story about Costco. This woman named Annette Alvarez, who started in Costco in Florida, in Miami, sweeping floors. She had such an incredible palate to taste wine that she quickly moved up the ranks to the regional buyer, and then she became the national buyer, and then the head buyer for the whole of Costco. Wow. Now, what you have to know is Costco is the largest wine buyer in the world, period. Nobody's bigger anywhere on earth, so they get everything. She had 12 buyers underneath her, and it was also known that nobody could ever get to her. Every wine company in the world wanted to talk to her, but she just wouldn't take calls. So after Shark Tank, I thought, I wonder if she's a Shark Tank fan. And I've got a guy on my staff that goes into the dark net and knows how to get cell numbers. And so he got her cell number for me, and I called it. And I left her a message saying, hey, it's Kevin O'Leary and Shark Tank. I have no idea if you watch the show at all, but I have this product called Zips. I'd like to show it to you. 20 minutes later, the phone rings. It's Annette Alvarez. And she says, you were rude to Barbara last night. I went, what? What does that have to do with anything? She said, no, we're not doing any business till you apologize to Barbara.
Wow.
I said, what did I do wrong? She said, you were rude to her. You cut her off. She was speaking. I said, that happens every day on Shark Tank.
Yeah.
Plus, you want to have less out of Barbara, not more. Anyways, we made it work. And she said, look, I'll give you 1 hour, John Wayne Airport, this Saturday, and I want to meet your wife.
Oh, wow.
I want to know who would marry a guy like you.
Right.
I said, okay. And I said to Linda, we're going to John Wayne Airport. We're going to meet Annette Alvarez. And here's where it all starts. We meet her. We sit down with her. She says, Kevin, let me tell you something about the wine business you don't know. If you want to make money in the wine business and not be one of these schmoes that just starts a little winery and says, oh, look, I got a winery, you have to be able to ship me 150,000 cases in a day.
Wow.
And I said, Annette, I can't do that. She said, you can if you partner with Vintage Wine Estates, a guy named Pat Roney. You go cut a deal with him. You come back to me and watch what happens. And she was the woman who gave me the advice that turned this whole thing and blew it up. And now we're going public today.
Wow. Wow. Well, congrats.
Yes, but I'm just telling you, listen to women sometimes.
All the time.
Yeah.
I shut up and listen a lot because that was great. Great information.
That's so interesting. And you know, because it's very, you know, you see you on Shark Tank, it's such a big show, and I think a lot of people are on the misconception that that's all you do, you know, like you're a famous person now who made, you know, his billions on your educational company, and now you just are a famous person who does Shark Tank, but you're still very much active in a lot of companies, correct?
Yeah, I have 35 plus portfolio companies across a wide range of activities, everything commercial kitchens, we do insecticides, we've got wireless charging companies, we make a very famous gym equipment for condominiums here in New York. That business exploded during COVID. We have the wine business, obviously, and many, many, many others. I will tell you something. Each day, there's a catastrophe in some part of my business, you know, portfolio. Something horrible's happening. And at the same time, the phone rings and it's some euphoric outcome. Like somebody's buying another one of our businesses.
Right.
And it's just like a passion play every day.
Yeah.
You know, on one end, total shit. On the other side, fantastic things.
Yeah.
And I've kind of gotten into the groove now, and I say, well, okay, that's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
You can't make everything work, and then every once in a while, boom.
And yeah. So
it hits big.
Like, so how many companies do you think you've invested in from Shark Tank?
Oh, it's got to be maybe over 100 by now. I've been doing this for 13 years.
Yeah. And how many, an estimate, do you think you've made a pretty good return on?
Well, what happens is, let me give you the ratio, because we've got all this data. In normal venture capital, when you go to Boston and talk to Silicon Valley, to a venture capital firm, they do 10 deals, and you look over 8 years, what happens? Two of them are absolutely wild successes. They make 40, 50 times on their money. And then about four of them are living dead. They're still in business, but they're just
barely getting by
and unfortunately waste a lot of your time, and the rest go to zero. And so it's sort of, you know, 20% work in the real world. In Shark Tank, 50% work. And here's why. Here's the secret sauce. So 50% of our deals make money because, see how we're sitting here doing social media, and you reach out and you've got millions of people listening to you. Your customer acquisition costs are very low.
Yes.
Right? We get 100 million eyeballs a year on Shark Tank through syndication in 23 countries.
Wow.
So when we put a product on Shark Tank, it's not uncommon to get all your money back in 24 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly what happens. And so our customer acquisition costs are either zero or very low. So even a marginal company, a shitty company that can't acquire customers, gets this jolt
of
free advertising for decades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And boom. They just keep selling stuff. And we have all this stuff documented, the rise. So the whole thing about Shark Tank is getting on Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And if you can get a deal, then you get the updates, which are really powerful. Some
companies
I love the updates. Beyond the tank.
We love.
We love.
But, you know, you get more sales on updates sometimes than you get on the main show.
Huh.
So you want to get a deal. That's the secret sauce to Shark Tank.
That's so interesting.
What's your favorite category or type of product that comes into the tank when you're like, oh, I'm listening to this one?
I love companies, you know, right across the board, every category included, that has already figured out social media and direct-to-consumer sales, and they know their customer acquisition cost. When they walk on that set and say, look, we don't sell retail, we sell direct-to-consumer, and here's our customer acquisition cost, here's the margins we make, all I'm doing then is pouring gasoline on the fire. If they're asking for $1 million, I'm happy to give it to them.
Yeah.
Because what's going to happen is we're going to just blow that business up because they've solved all the problems already.
Like the infrastructure's already there.
Exactly. And the ones that those are the deals I tend to do. Anything run by a woman gets priority for me because I've made so much money with women. I'm just, you know, I'm biased in some ways. I shouldn't be, but women tend to mitigate risk. You know that old expression, you want something done, give it to a busy mother?
Yeah.
Like they can keep a lot of stuff in the air at once, and that's what you need in a small business. And also, they're much more savvy on social.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. And women are more likely to engage and share on social, so you want a woman speaking to them.
And, well, the same way you do it. You know, you connect with these, you know, other people, and they just want to hear what's next from you.
Right.
Well, companies that have figured that out have very, very powerful business models.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so what would you say is your most successful business investment from Shark Tank? Is it Plated, even though that wasn't?
It is. It's a New York City deal in some sense, right? It was started here by a couple of entrepreneurs. They came on the show. They had a ridiculous valuation. They didn't get a deal. A year later, they run into me in the street and say, hey, listen, we've been tenderized by the real world.
Right.
We're willing to cut a deal. And so we do it. We do a deal. And then they get back into the tank in a follow-up. And then one day we get a call from Albertsons right after Amazon bought Whole Foods and said, we need to buy a digital platform.
Right.
340 million smackaroos.
Wow.
And the business was like 36 months old.
That's crazy.
So those dudes rode into the sunset.
That's amazing. We love so many of the episodes where you have guest sharks. We learn so much from them. Who was your dream guest shark for the tank?
Have they already been on?
Well, no. My dream guest shark is Mr. Wonderful. I love that guy.
I love that guy.
I love that guy, yeah. Look, we've had a lot of guest sharks. We've had all kinds of guest sharks. Some are better than others. Some, you know, what happens with Shark Tank, and this includes all the people that come and pitch, they, you know, 100,000 people apply. 340 get picked. 220 get taped. Maybe 180 air.
Wow.
Okay, so here's what happens. You've been practicing for months. You know you're going to get on that carpet.
Yeah.
And dun, 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 you walk out the door.
The music.
Even though you've practiced, now it's real.
Yeah.
26 cameras rolling, jibs moving down, you know, steady cam all around you, and you freeze.
Yeah. It's sometimes painful. I have to say, like, at least for me, I can think of one episode in particular that will, for me, ever go down as the worst pitch ever. And he actually went to your college.
Yeah, he went to
Colgate. I think that's why I remember him. He had that app that was like basically a map of the airport and it would help you like find restaurants. And he was like such a classic millennial, like needing validation. And then he went back and he was like crying in his mom's arms. Like it was just all so like funny.
But he sucked.
And no, and the app was like he was going around to different airports and writing down like where there was no real like infrastructure. Like, do you have like memories or things that you like always will remember as being like funny or particularly like terrible?
You know, I get in a lot of trouble for being the mean shark. I'm not the mean shark. I just tell the truth.
Yeah.
When it sucks, it sucks.
Yeah. That's
okay.
Fair.
And it's very important that they know it sucks so that they don't do it again. Stop sucking.
Yeah.
Like try and come up with something better and then come back. We've had people come back, but it's really a bad idea if it's going to go to zero and you take your family's mortgage down, you know.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Well, yeah. You seem like you're very much on like the tough love side of things.
Well, I'm just the truth. And if you can't deal with me, imagine the real world. What's going to do to you?
Yeah.
You're going to get fried. And so that's my attitude. But, you know, I got to listen to Barbara and I got to listen to Lori.
Yeah.
You know.
But you seem like you love it. Like it's a great part of your job.
Yeah. But they, you know, what they do is they say, well, look, I'm not going to invest in you. This is Barbara all the time. I'm not going to invest in you, but you keep doing what you're doing. And I look at her and say, what are you doing? Like, don't you have any morals?
Right.
Like,
now,
the only reason Barbara gets to the Shark Tank set each year is I buy her a new broom.
You guys have such a great dynamic. I'm curious, is that for show? Or you guys act like that behind, like off screen too? You all have a crazy dynamic.
We're like friends. We've been dealing with each other for over 13 years. So we try and be cordial. But we're competitors.
Yeah.
We're competing for deals, and we like each other and all that stuff. Barbara's a great cook. When I'm in New York, I'll often go and have dinner with her. She's great. We're also incredibly busy. I've never seen all the sharks get in a room during the off season ever. Hmm. It's impossible to get them back together.
Not even for a birthday party?
Well, we can't, but everybody's so everywhere. And so the only date we know we're going to see each other all together is the first shoot date of Shark Tank, when we just clear our schedules and we go do it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's such a great show. It's become such a part of American culture and business culture.
And business education. I think that, especially for us, but I think for so many people, everything we know about business, comes from Shark Tank.
So no one thought that would happen. Certainly most people thought business would be boring.
Yeah.
That did not turn out to be the case. I remember the moment that it all changed. I'll never forget it. I think it was Boston Logan Airport. I've been doing Shark Tank for 3 years. No one knew anything about it. Nobody watched it. It was just, the only people watching were two dogs and a cat.
Right.
That was about it. But all of a sudden, in year four, something happened. It was coming out of that really big financial crisis in 2008, and entrepreneurship started to be very hip, and Shark Tank caught on. And I was with my wife and daughter at the airport, and I went into the men's room, and I, was at the urinal doing my business, and there was a guy to my right, two over, right? And he kept looking at me. And I noticed he kept looking at me, and he said, "Are you that guy on Shark Tank?" I said, "Yeah."
Yes.
That's the first time it ever happened. He said, "You're an asshole." And I said, "Why would you say that?" He said, "Last night on Shark Tank, you took 51% of a startup. That's outrageous."
Business is business.
I said, "Hey, it's my money. I'll cry if I want to. What are you talking about?" And I said to him, "Listen, a lot of people make deals in bathrooms, but not here today, my friend.
Right.
I'm going to run my business the way I see I should."
100%.
And he couldn't have known that Linda and Savannah were out there. He goes outside, and I find out later that he said to Linda, "That asshole Kevin O'Leary's in the men's room."
Oh, didn't know it was your wife.
No, and she said, "I know."
Oh my God.
Yeah. No,
it's really an amazing show, and I feel like before Shark Tank, entrepreneur meant unemployed, and now it really means you've shaped a culture around the word, and it's something people want to aspire to be and start their own businesses, and I just love it.
We do. We love the entrepreneurial spirit.
Let's talk about
spirit.
What you've done here, because you're the girl that's basically telling everybody you're unemployed, right?
Yeah.
You're a comedian.
Yeah.
Which is erratic work,
yes.
To say the best.
Yes,
and
yes.
Then you come in here, with your sister every day, and you produce this, which has actually been very successful for you. So you're unemployed, but you're making money.
Right. It's a beautiful poetic irony of it all.
It is. But I wonder how many millennials now, even Gen Zers, are going to look at your model, both of you, and say, "I need to do that," because you have control over your own destiny.
Yes. I think we're living in a world where kids today want to grow up to be influencers, podcasters, because part of the job is to make it look easy, take beautiful photos, filter everything. What a lot of people don't see is a lot of the job is boring paperwork like you would do at any other 9-to-5 job. But influencing is the one industry that's literal sole purpose is to make it look fabulous, make it look fun, make it look easy, make it look, easy road to money and fame. When in reality, it's actually a lot of work. We do a daily podcast, which is crazy because most people do weekly podcasts. And I can't count on my hand the number of podcasts that launch and never go past 10 episodes. Even producing one episode a week is incredible hard work. So it's just one of those things that looks super easy. And I think that's why a lot of people want to do it. It looks like it's the fast track to money and fame. When in reality, it's actually the opposite.
But it's more than that because, if you ask millennials, 8 out of 10 will say, "I'm going to be an influencer." You can't just become an influencer. The market is really cruel that way. You have to have something about you. Maybe, your story, the fact that you were a comic that gives the magnetism that creates an interest for other people. Most people don't have that.
Yeah, it's so saturated right now.
Well, it's not only saturated, breaking through, even if you have it, is next to impossible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Getting your first 1,000,000 followers is really, really hard, let alone 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really can't get traction until you get scale.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what I've learned, dealing with all the influencers that I deal with and the stuff we do is that, unfortunately for some people, they don't realize early enough that people smell bullshit a mile away.
Yes.
And when you get canceled, you're canceled.
Yeah.
You ain't coming back.
Well, we might beg
to differ. We keep whack-a-mole.
We wrote the book on cancellation and cancel culture, literally. And I actually disagree. I think we're living in a really interesting time right now where it's like a rubber band that's going to snap. I think that for a while, that was the case. Like, if you had even a stench of scandal or controversy.
What
like,
about all these people that got Me Too'd?
Well, oh, that's yeah. different.
Yeah, we try well, to separate. What's we try to separate versus crimes.
Yes, so we feel like cancel culture is this huge bubble where we're like always canceling people for saying bad things and doing bad things, when actually the two of them are incredibly different. If you were Me Too'd, you are a criminal. Like, that is separate. We're talking about cancel culture. You know, you have tweets resurface from when you were in high school. You make a joke that not everyone thinks is funny because, you know, we're living in overly sensitive times. Like, that type of cancel culture is so toxic because, first of all, it leaves no room for growth.
Okay, Roseanne Barr.
Ooh.
I'll tell you why I bring that one up.
Okay.
She changed forever the morality contracts in Hollywood that I was subject to in subsequent contracts. You know, the story, just so we bring it to viewers to understand here, and I want to hear your response because you're saying not necessarily, right? She said something very off color.
Yes.
Very. That was her comedy 10 years ago.
Yes.
Okay. The network that was sponsoring the number one show had 80 million, I think 68 million worth of upfront advertising. The CEO canceled it an hour and a half later, gave all the money back to the advertisers.
Yeah.
Canceled the show. That's extreme.
Yes, because I do think her tweet was incredibly wrong and offensive.
So where does it fit in your continuum? I'm trying to press the
So we like to say that every cancellation is not one size fits all. I need to know all the details. So
well, you know that
for
detail.
That for that Roseanne thing, like, she was a however old she is, like a 50-year-old woman, like, saying something in present times that she really should not have said. Like, I actually think like her being removed from the show was the best thing for it. I don't know if the show needed to be canceled in its entirety. There were other people working on the show.
120 people.
100, yeah.
They brought it back in a different format, and I think a lot of people got their jobs back. But
and it's still on, and it's successful.
Look, I'm not endorsing what she said, but I'm pointing out to you that these extremes on cancellation are really serious.
Yes.
And it has materially affected her ability to get back into her business.
Yes.
And so it was horrible what she did.
Yeah,
but so that was her comedy.
Yeah, there has to be consequence. Like, we live in a time, and I think we've all kind of come to the realization, we live in a time that's very different than the time that was 10 years ago. And we all need to adjust. And I think that if you're still saying certain things in this day and age, like, there are consequences for what you say. But I don't think that people should be held to the same standard. You make a joke in 2010 and it resurfaces in 2021. That's not fair. We're living in different times.
Well, then you're right in that case, because I don't think you can be sexist or racist, period. Not now, not back then, not in the future. I don't think that's a good thing for anybody. And I think that's what got her in real trouble, because she took something that maybe she thought could pass 10 years ago and tried it out today, and then done. So you're the same, I assume.
Comedy is a really interesting space.
Well, that's what I wanted to probe into.
Right, so comedy, like, most comedians have podcasts, and comedy and podcasting couldn't be more different. Comedy is no holds bar. People fight for the right to say whatever they want because it's a joke, and you should be able to make a joke about anything. Whereas podcasting comes from the digital space, and the digital space is so sensitive.
Comedy, there's many classic comics that are really, really on the edge.
Dave Chappelle.
On the edge on sexist, racist stuff. Like, you can't do that anymore.
No.
I'm talking about comedy and the comedy vertical. Going into a club and really laying it out there.
My personal style of comedy is very specific and intentional. Like, I do self-deprecating comedy. I make fun of myself, because no one can be mad at you if you're making fun of yourself. You're not offending anyone. I'm literally just offending myself.
Okay, so you think those comics have to change. They can't do their traditional routines anymore.
I think comedy is like the last remaining corner of the earth where you can say crazy things, but I don't think it'll last long. It's already touchy.
You're saying you won't last long.
Yeah, one won't last long. I think a frontier that's in question. I think people are sticking up for the right to joke about what you want to joke about, and then there are people who are like, you can't make jokes about that. And I think depending on the comedian or depending on the celebrity or influencer, when we say, like, you can be canceled and you can come back, you have to pull yourself up by the bootstraps. No corporation's going to give you a job. Mm-hmm. No brand is going to endorse you. Like, you need to make
build
the path
your own business
for yourself, because the industry and the world that we live in is not going to give you a second chance.
So you are canceled in the sense you can't go into mainstream. You have to do it yourself.
Yes.
And you need to find your audience, and you have to start from scratch. And then you build something that
is impenetrable.
You are in charge of your own destiny.
No one can cancel you because you own your own show. You make all your own revenue. You make your own merch. Like, you don't rely on any other company.
But when you're beholden to a larger company, and we're, you know, in these extremely sensitive times, like, that's corporate culture.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this model you've developed for yourselves, actually proven it out, is very desirable for many people who want to control their own destiny.
Yeah.
I think you work harder than you would in a corporate environment. You have more risk in your life because you don't know what can happen.
Mm-hmm. You have to put up your own money when you start it.
And you also may make one mistake and get fried and have to start again.
Yeah. But the beautiful thing about the internet is that, like, it's just the Wild West. Like, you can do anything you want. And there's so many people on it. Like, we've just kind of cycled through so many different stages of our business. We're entering a new one every week. Like, that's just, you have to keep up with it, and like, you have to shed your old skin and just keep moving forward if you want to stay in this industry for a long time.
I think you do, don't you?
Of course.
You've bypassed all the traditional media. Like, it used to be, you'll never get on this network again, you'll never get this, you'll never get that, and it was all controlled by Hollywood agents and all that stuff. And to a certain extent, television still is that mm-hmm. way. But you know, I have more followers now than most of the networks I'm on.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's a strange phenomenon that, you know, I can reposition that content, modify it somewhat, and get to a brand new audience in a different way.
Yeah.
I'm not sure the model doesn't keep going in that direction. And that, you know, linear television continues to decline as social, you know, this is kind of like social network itself.
You know, every influencer, podcaster, whatever, becomes their own little media industry. And the bigger you get, you do almost have more reach. Think of like podcasting versus radio. Radio is, you know, huge. A lot of podcasts reach more people than traditional radio shows do.
Podcasts used to be framed, you know, what I like to, I get invited on a lot of podcasts, including this one. And what I like to do is resist the temptation to go look at all the previous podcasts. I don't want to know anything about you when I show up here. I mean, I met you for a few hours, right, mm-hmm. on an island. I thought I was thoroughly entertained. But I want to go in fresh.
Yeah.
And then later, you know, if we start doing it over and over again, I kind of get the groove of where it is. But I've been much more successful doing that in terms of engaging. And podcasts aren't just audio anymore. They're video.
Yeah.
That's what a podcast is. It's just another television show.
Yeah. Literally.
And my attitude is it's much fresher when you go in cold.
Yes, I agree.
You know, I hate all the scripted stuff and everything else. I just did the Pomps podcast in Miami last week. We had a crazy amount of fun because mm-hmm. we said no questions set. Nothing.
Yeah.
Let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was fun.
That's the way it should be.
Definitely a refreshing format. You're not bound by those restraints of even cursing, like something as simple as that,
right.
or time constraints. Like, you can really go
or topic
so long.
Matter. Who knows right. where yeah. you go, right?
Right, exactly.
We went from wine to Roseanne Barr.
Yeah, exactly. But I think those are serious issues. Let's go back to wine because I want to
taste.
We're going to start with the Chardonnay, even though it's not chilled, but this Chard just won its fifth gold award.
Okay? Oh, wow.
Now, let me tell you something about the wine business just before we pour this. 97% of wine in America is sold for under $14.99 a bottle.
Wow.
Nobody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
That means 3%, which is virtually nothing, are those expensive wines. The challenge becomes, how do you make a wine that tastes like it's worth $60 that you can buy for $11? And I spent a lot of time on this because I wanted my return rates, because I'm going direct to consumer, to be less than 2%, which was my goal. They're significantly less than 1%.
Wow.
So that means I have to kind of adapt to the palate. Most women drink Pinot Grigio and Chardonnay.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, they drink whites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you need to work with a lot of women to sample. Like, I'll blend it. Mm-hmm. I'll try it on my wife, try it on her friends, then do some serious taste testing, sampling, to get the vibe from what a Miami woman says versus a California woman versus somebody in Champaign, Urbana, to try and nail down, do I have it?
Yeah.
Because I'm blending these wines. I'm adding little elements of other varietals to get that flavor. About 5 years ago, I hit it big when I started taking less. You know, when you put Chardonnay into an oak barrel, it gets buttery, oaky. And women were moving away from that. They were saying, give me something fresher. It's too heavy, you know? Mm-hmm. And I went in that direction, and then I started winning awards like crazy.
Oh, I'm so excited to try this, because I'm usually not a huge Chardonnay fan, but I love Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Grigio Sancerre. But yeah. If you're saying this isn't like a buttery, heavy
right.
Chardonnay,
so
this could be...
So I took this way off in that direction, mm-hmm. which is actually classic Montrachet style, which is what the French do in the DRC region of France. So let's try this. And I
How much is that bottle?
This bottle tonight, the reason I'm talking about it, when we go public, we're going to do a giant sale on QVC. Normally it would be $15.99. Tonight it's going to be $11.12.
$15.99 is still a great price.
We're going to sell. I did something remarkable a few weeks ago on QVC. In 20 hours, we sold $5.2 million worth of wine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you work with Lori?
No, I worked with Mr. Wonderful.
Oh, he's
Chef
great.
Wonderful.
I hear good things, yeah.
No, listen, you know, I'm the wine guy in QVC now because I think people trust me when I say I have your back. Yeah. I really know what I'm talking about.
I would trust you, like, to choose a wine for me.
Will you also show us the right way to taste wine without looking like a fool?
I absolutely
great
will.
Great question,
Jackie. We have these COVID glasses, which are fantastic.
Yes.
Now, normally you would never overfill a glass of wine. You have to leave enough space to the air to mix with the wine so you can swill it a little bit.
Good to know.
It smells delightful.
Yeah. Now let's do this, because this should be chilled, but it's not because it came to the studio. Now the nose, you should be picking up some apricot and apple here.
Yeah.
Right?
The apple.
Okay. So now take a little bit and just let it roll back on the back of your tongue.
Stunning.
Down the hatch.
Nectar from the nipple of Aphrodite.
No, it's really delicious.
It's so good.
It's fantastic.
I actually don't drink wine, but
see,
it's delightful.
See how crisp it is? It's not oversweet. It's towards what you liked in the dryness.
Yes. Mm.
This is a monster for me. This wine is my number one seller in wines.
Really?
Yeah.
It's delightful.
It is delightful.
Stunning color as well.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And so, you know, this kind of wine would be fantastic with cheese. It would be great in the summertime. Terrific with chicken. People like to drink it. I always drink a glass of white at 4 o'clock when the market closes, and I have one, sometimes two, and then I go to my reds. So we're going to go to red next.
Okay.
Well,
this was
that
Chardonnay
so
was
good.
Stunning. And here.
Sometimes you
that
can be a real
really
asshole
good.
And stick your pinky out like this when you're drinking. See that?
Oh, yeah, because we're fancy
Pinky's
like that.
Out.
Exactly. And you know you're drinking with a dork when you do that.
That's yes, cool. Someone uncultured.
Okay, now.
And now this is a...
Cabernet Sauvignon is known for being the big, spicy American red, you know, for with meat and just a big, bold statement. And what you're looking for here is peppers and tannins and leather and just richness. And you get this by blending it again. And so many people don't understand that to get the tail of the flavor, you have to... You know, maybe you sneak in 2% Pinot, or maybe you put in a Syrah, or something. You have to blend. You have to sit in the cellar for days with your test of vin and try different stuff while not getting inebriated, because you stop sensing the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the time I'm tasting wine and spitting it out. A spittoon. So here we go. Now this is going to have a huge nose. Also five different awards on this one.
Oh, wow.
The red wine with the white carpet is
yes,
so dangerous.
Yes, I was just thinking pink and white and everything
yeah,
here.
Yeah, it's fine.
What a disaster.
It'll be a splash of tie-dye.
You know, when's the last time you did a wine tasting here? Never.
Never. We've never done it on the show.
Okay, so here we go.
It's good to start with the best. It can only go down from here.
Yeah.
All right, so
again,
smells lovely.
We really want to, you know, we definitely, yeah, I don't want to see that drop.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is going to have a peppery kind of spice to it. And the more, if you waited 10 minutes, it would even be more bold because it's just aerating. This is going to be really good, I can tell. Okay, let's go. Ready?
Oh, wow.
Ichiwawa caramba. That is fantastic.
It's very good.
That is.
You know, I never drink red wine, but it's very good.
Isn't that delicious?
Yes.
People tell me all the time.
I really taste the pepper.
Yeah, you see it? It's there. And that took a long, long, many years. I've been doing this wine for 7 different years, different varietals, and started winning about 4 years ago when I started blending. But, you know, you got to try new things in wine. And by the way, the health attributes of one glass of red a year, a day, for all year long, works in longevity.
Yes, it's good for your heart.
Everything. And so you don't have to get drunk. You can just drink 1 glass of 9 ounces of red wine a day and almost consider it medicine.
You also could get drunk if you want.
Well, that happens to me quite often. I'm trying to avoid it.
Oops.
All right, so where can everyone buy O'Leary Wines? On QVC, you're having a big sale.
Well, there's what I've learned is, this is the business side again, wine is 3 tiers of distribution. So I used to give all my profits to distributors. Then I learned how to sell direct when I got my social chops together. And I started small, but now I'm huge. So you can buy O'Leary Fine Wines at Shop Mr. Wonderful starting tonight at midnight.
Wow.
And we do our big sale, and that site's going to stay up forever. We're announcing it at the NASDAQ at 4. You're getting a sneak peek.
Woohoo, this won't be up till tomorrow.
Or anytime on QVC.com.
Fabulous.
We're the largest purveyor of wine, and we ship it to you
directly. Wow.
Okay, so $29,000.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is great. A lot of people go on to the program where they get shipped a case every 60 days. Excuse me. They put it in a like a lay down kind of wine cellar box, and you stick it in the back of your closet, and boom, you got wine all the time.
Forever, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's delicious. Thank you so much for being here.
Yes.
You can keep up with Kevin, obviously, on Shark Tank, on Instagram, at Kevin O'Leary TV, on YouTube. And that's our show. Thank you so much for being here.
I really enjoyed it. One more sip, please.
Cheers to us.
That's great. Cheers. What fun.
What fun.
What fun.
Cheers. Thank you guys for watching. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.